It's the Abyssinian Choir from the Abyssinian Baptist Church in Harlem as we begin a four-part February series with Howard Dodson, director of the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture at the New York Public Library in Harlem. We'll start today by talking about the 200th anniversary of Harlem's Abyssinian Baptist Church. Professor Dodson, thanks for doing this series with us. Welcome back to WNYC.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be back, and I'm delighted to be have an opportunity to talk with you this month.
And first, since you'll be with us for four Thursdays this month, tell our listeners a little bit of context about the Schomburg Center and its role. Technically, it is part of the New York Public Library system, right?
Yes, the Schomburg Center is one of the four research centers of the New York Public Library. There's the Science, Industry, and Business Library at 34th and Madison, the Library for the Performing Arts at Lincoln Center, the Humanities and Social Sciences Library at 42nd and 5th Avenue, and the Schomburg Center at 135th and Malcolm X Boulevard. And we've been in existence now for 81 years and have been a part of the Harlem community since its emergence as a major center of African-American, African diaspora history and culture.
And one thing that's sure to come up in the next few weeks is the fact that it was 200 years ago this year that the United States banned the importation of slaves. But today we're going to talk about the bicentennial of the Abyssinian Baptist Church, about which there is a display at the Schomburg Center, correct?
Yes, we have partnered with the Abyssinian Baptist Church to present the bicentennial exhibition of the church, which traces its history over its 200 years of development from its initial base, actually in First Baptist Church on Gold Street down in Lower Manhattan, and it moved uptown eventually to Harlem during the 1920s.
And what was the reason for the move, and who was the population base? What purpose did the what role did the church play in the community?
Well, to begin with, the church starts off in Gold Street, as I mentioned, and they decided, the black members decided to form their own church back in 1808 because they had to worship in the Gold Street Church in segregated and this and undiscriminatory kind of conditions, and so they started really first generation out of slavery black individuals creating a church of their own. And over the years, it moved in Lower Manhattan up until 1903, when it was moved up to 40th Street, and was on 40th Street between 7th and 8th, right, I understand, on a piece of property that was eventually bought by the New York Times. And from that base, Adam Clayton Powell Jr.'s father, Adam Clayton Powell Sr., orchestrated the move of the church from that area up to Harlem. And it was a major development in on two levels. First of all, he, following the tradition of his predecessors, saw the church not just as a place to minister to the spiritual needs of its members, but as an institution dedicated to the social uplift and development of its surrounding communities. And by the early 20th century, the black community had started to move to Harlem, and he saw this as a possible place for the future growth and development of the church, found the location on 138th Street, purchased it with the church funds in 1920, and then the church membership started to get cold feet. He decides that he will try to nudge them and offered his resignation at the end of a sermon in December. And the trustees and the members of the church decided that that was simply impossible. And he was eventually able to raise, through the church, the money needed to go ahead and build what was at the time the most expensive church ever built by an African-American. The most expensive church prior to that had cost about $100,000. Eventually, this church cost over $320,000. And all of that was paid for by the members of the church out of their own pockets. And the church, as a result, became this incredibly independent institution, owing nothing to anyone but themselves and their own conscience and their own commitments. And as a consequence of that, has been able to function as an active agent in the development of the Harlem community ever since.
Listeners, do you have a question about the Abyssinian Baptist Church, or for that matter, Harlem and its history on this occasion of the 200th first bicentennial, the 200th year of the Abyssinian Baptist Church's existence? Call us at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. For part one of our Black History Month series with Howard Dodson, director of the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture at the New York Public Library in Harlem. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Can you talk about the nature of Black Baptist Christianity at that time? Was it very much what we think of it as today?
Very much so. It has had the Abyssinian Church was actually one of the first five independent Black Baptist churches to be established in the United States, and its mode of service, etc., like that of other churches, has in fact been handed down over the generations, and a much more spirited church service. One that was in marked contrast to both some of the Catholic liturgy and practice, as well as some of the Episcopalian churches. And the Abyssinian Church, as a Baptist church, has represented what I'd call the progressive stream of the Baptist Church in the United States. Progressive in the sense that it has seen itself as a conscious agent of social change in behalf of the interests of the African American community. There are other branches of the Baptist Church, both Black and white, that shy away from any engagement of the social situation in which Blacks and others find themselves. But the Black Baptist Church in general, and the Abyssinian Baptist Church, especially the progressive wing of the Baptist Church, has seen itself as being a part and parcel of that larger struggle for freedom and justice and human dignity that's been at the center of the African-American experience since the period of slavery.
It is interesting to look at the range of politics, not to mention culture, under the umbrella of the Baptist Church. The Southern, what we think of as the Southern Baptist Church, is probably the most politically regressive major branch of Christianity, or arguably so anyway, in the United States.
I'll let you say that. I'm not
arguably. I'll say arguably.
Yeah, arguably.
Attitudes toward women, as far as in addition to whatever vestiges of racism there may be, and yet this branch of the Baptist Church has always been working for what the Black, mostly Black, overwhelmingly Black congregation saw as social justice, and yet they're both Baptist.
Yes, they're both Baptist. And one of the things about the African-American religion in general, there's a general, all too frequently a tendency to talk about the disagreements that existed between Blacks and whites on the basis of race. And yes, there was a racial dimension to it, but there was also a fundamental theological dimension to it. And basically what the Black members of these churches, the realization they came to was that the church was in fact supporting oppression and exploitation, etc., and their reading of the Bible suggested that the Christianity was not a liberation a church of oppression and exploitation, but indeed a religion committed to the liberation of people, oppressed and exploited people. And that theological base has rested at the foundation of most Black churches down to the present time, and was, in fact, one of the major impetuses for Blacks leaving white churches in order to establish their own.
Really interesting. Keita in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Keita.
Hi, how you doing?
All right.
My question is, what is the church's relationship to Ethiopia as it has its... what is the connection with Ethiopia?
What's Abyssinian about the Abyssinian
Church? About the Abyssinian Baptist Church? That's a very good question. There is a legend has it that among the individuals who walked out of the church to form the new church were a group of Ethiopian mariners who had been worshiping at Gold Street and decided to leave. And that the name of the church actually came from that group of mariners. In putting together this exhibition on the history of the church, we're actually able to go back to and get copies of the minute books of the Gold Street Church that documented that that action. And the list of the names of individuals who left the church do not include any that are obviously Ethiopian. And so the question was there, what is the basis for this decision to affiliate or identify themselves with Ethiopia? And in the document, there's a statement, I believe it's from Ecclesiastes, that says, Ethiopia shall soon stretch out her hand unto God. And my interpretation, and it's just mine, is that the individuals who walked out of the church wanted to maintain their connection with the Christian church and with the Baptist tradition, but also wanted to align themselves with Africans who were practicing Christianity. There was a Christian church in Ethiopia at the time, and they embraced the notion of Ethiopia and Abyssinia as a kind of secondary mother church for their new congregation. That's my interpretation. It's not a part of any formal history record at this time. First time that I've seen the documents, and it looks like that may have in fact been the case.
That is interesting. And there are others called the Abyssinian Baptist Church. There's one in Newark, I believe. In fact,
yes,
that music
is
that we played at the beginning from the Abyssinian Church choir, a listener called up and said that they think it was from the Abyssinian Baptist Church choir of Newark, not the one in Harlem. And so I want to mention that doubt because we actually can't confirm it by looking at our source for the recording, but it's an indication that the Abyssinian Baptist Church is a name that recurs.
Yes, it is. And one of the things that's not generally known, the Concord Baptist Church in Brooklyn was actually a spinoff from the Abyssinian Baptist Church back in the 19th century. There were members of the Abyssinian Baptist Church, the 19th century church, that were actually living in Brooklyn and decided that they wanted, and with the blessings of the Abyssinian Church, found a location in Brooklyn and established the Concord Baptist Church. And so in some respects, it's one of the children of Abyssinian.
Let's go back to 1808, since we're hooking this to the 200th anniversary of the Abyssinian Baptist Church in Harlem. Can you talk a little bit about New York City at that time in terms of population? And was slavery still legal in New York? A lot of people don't even realize to this day that slavery was ever legal in New York, but it was.
Well, slavery was legal in New York. Ironically, New York has a longer history of slavery than it has of freedom. Institution of slavery, well, New York is established, founded in around 1625, 1626, and slavery was not abolished until 1827, so that's over 200 years of slavery. We have to go to 2027 to match the period of freedom here in New York. And during the period that you are questioning, that slavery was still very much alive. The city was actually still very much a part of the lower Manhattan area. It had not really moved much, pretty too far to the north. And at that time, in addition to slavery existing, there were, in fact, free black populations here. And those free black populations had, in fact, affiliated with not just the Gold Street Baptist Church, but with the Methodist churches here, one of the new other organizations that came out of one of the white churches was the African Methodist Episcopal Zion Church, whose mother church is actually just a block from Abyssinian on 137th Street.
Right.
That church also was founded here in Lower Manhattan and by free blacks who decided that they needed to strike an independent course as well.
Harley in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hi, Harley.
Hi, yes. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually live on 138th Street. I just recently moved there, and I think it's a great neighborhood, and I think the church does a lot for the area. And I was just curious. I would, on Sunday mornings, I'd see these enormous lines curling around the block of what appeared to be mostly European, I want to say tourists, but I'm not sure, if waiting to get into the church. I mean, this huge line of people. And I actually went one Sunday, and standing in line, I was with my girlfriend, and we were nobody around us was an English speaker. They were all from France or...
Interesting. And Harley, I have to leave it there because we're almost out of time. We have about a half a minute, Howard Dotson. And I guess it is a tourist attraction now, isn't it?
Yes, it has become one of several major tourist attractions, and people from around the world come to the church, as well as to a number of the other churches in Harlem, to experience the worship experience that is provided by the church. The church members continue to be the overwhelming majority of people who are there, and the people are standing in line, in some respects waiting for the church members to find their places in the church. And then the those who are coming as tourists are welcomed in.
Howard Dotson is director of the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture at the New York Public Library in Harlem. He will be with us every Thursday this month for a four-part Black History Month series, and I'm looking forward to the others. What are we talking about next week? We already decided, right?
I believe we'll be focused on the bicentennial of the abolition of the slave trade, but I wanted your audience to know that the exhibition, the bicentennial exhibition on the Abyssinian Baptist Church, will be available at the Schomburg Center.